We're doing the laws of Shabbos, and we're going to review. We have many new faces here today. So we're going to go over the halachos we had started. Pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. So we know, the Torah tells us, v'chai bahim, that the Torah says in Parshas Achrei Mos, these are the mitzvahs Hashem gave you that you're responsible to do, v'chai bahim, and to live in these mitzvot, and from there we derive v'lo sheyamut bahim, that we perform the mitzvot, but not at the expense of a life. And from here we learn that you're allowed to transgress a mitzvah in order to save a life. So it's not only for the sake of saving your own life, it's also for the sake of saving someone else's life. And it's not only when you're certain that by being Mechal Shabbos you'll save a life, it's even when you think that you might save a life. The example the Mishnah brings in Masechet Yoma is when there's a pile of stones, you see a wall fell down and you see a pile of stones, you have to move them, you have to dig, you have to uncover the stones because you think there's someone down there. Now, there may or may not be, but when you're not sure, you go, that's all called Pikuach Nefesh. And when we go for Pikuach Nefesh, so that's a mitzvah, even if afterwards we find out that there was no need for you to do what you did. They call you for a Hatzalah call, and when you get there, you discover the guy's better, it's irrelevant. Very often in the cases of Pikuach Nefesh, we do things, and later on we discover it would have been okay without it. We still did a mitzvah. So that's a very important perspective. To know that when I have a scenario that has a potential of pikuach nefesh, I have to deal. And I don't tell myself, well, maybe it's not important. And we discussed a few stories last week. We discussed the famous tshuva of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, where a doctor was summoned to an old age home. Now you remember. We discussed last week that the doctor was called and he had to travel a half hour. And 2 minutes after they called the doctor, the patient died. So there was nothing to do at that point. So they asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, should we call back the doctor and tell him not to come? Calling him is an Isser Drabanan, and he's going to have to be over on many Surim Doraisa to get here. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said, no, he's doing a mitzvah. What would you do an Isser Drabanan for? So they said, but he's going to do all his drive and leave the tchum and drive a car and do all of that on Shabbos, and there's no mitzvah anymore. The man's dead. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, that's not true. He's doing a mitzvah. The fact that I know and you know that the man is dead, that doesn't change the fact that it's still a mitzvah for the doctor to come. And it's not that retroactively you'll find out, hey, I didn't do a mitzvah. He did do a mitzvah. So that's an important perspective. Yes?
So Pikuach Nefesh is to try and save a life? It's not...
Yeah.
And here it's, you know, not physically saving anybody.
Right. Right, that's exactly what we're zoning in on. The pikuach nefesh is when I think there's a chance I'll save a life. And I gave a story last week about a girl that was under the influence of Tylenol, and she had just been released from the hospital, and they couldn't know her. She had a fever in the morning, and the parents hadn't realized that was dangerous. They gave her Tylenol. They came to me 3 hours later, and now it wasn't clear whether she no longer had a fever and didn't need to be hospitalized, or she was still under the influence of the Tylenol, and that's why she didn't have a fever now. So they didn't want to move. And I said, get in the car and go to the hospital, because there's a chance that her life might be in danger. And in fact, it was. She spent the next week in the hospital. Well, no. She had other issues. She had issues with her kidneys. I don't remember what her issues were. The girl had other issues. And when the hospital released them, they said, we'll let you go home for Shabbos and come back. But the instructions were, if she has a fever, come back right away. Now she didn't have a fever. So the question was, yeah, but she had a fever 3 hours ago. Do we still have to go to the hospital? Is the reason now, 3-4 hours later, that she doesn't have a fever because of the Tylenol, or she's better? We don't know. We don't know. She has to go to the hospital. So, safek, when we're not sure, that's also pikuach nefesh. And that's why when soldiers go to the army, I very often tell them, if your commander tells you it's pikuach nefesh to do something on Shabbos, you have to listen to them. It's at least the safek. Maybe he's telling you the truth, maybe he's not, but what choice do you have? You have to listen to him. There's at least a safek. What?
I think this was like 2-3 weeks ago this year. I don't know, it was a Thursday night.
Okay. Okay. Next story. Sometimes pikuach nefesh is not so clear. So a shaila that came in a number of years ago, a person had a very complicated heart condition, and the doctors told him he could fast on Yom Kippur. So I felt like it was very dangerous for him to fast on Yom Kippur given his heart condition. So I asked him to ask his doctor, based on what he's saying, that what research do we have with his condition about what fasting would do to his condition? He wants to fast Yom Kippur, I understand that, but what's the doctor basing it on? So when the doctor was cornered, he said, actually, we don't really know. And you're right, I'm not sure. So ordinarily, though, we listen to the doctor. We have to ask the right questions, but when the doctor gives us an estimation, we listen to them. So we listen to the doctors to be mekel, and when it comes to be machmir, so we question them. We're not always listening to the doctors. I'll explain. So like this doctor before Yom Kippur, when he told the heart patient, yeah, you could fast, so then we questioned him, wait a second, are you sure? I'm sure enough that I think it's okay. Wait a second, you think it's okay? It's okay. I don't need you to be from me at his and endanger him. Tell me what you think. You think you have enough knowledge? You think... And I knew this heart patient, they hadn't understood what his real problem was. He had multiple problems and they weren't sure where the problem lay. So I was wondering, if you don't know what the problem is, how can you be so confident that fasting won't help him? Fasting won't hurt him. And when the doctor was asked a little bit more, he said, you're right, I don't really know. Which was interesting. But usually it goes the other way around. A doctor comes in and says, this person shouldn't fast on Yom Kippur. This person's life's in danger. You have to get them to the hospital. And we wonder, is it really important, or is the doctor only saying that because they don't care about Shabbos? They don't care about Yom Kippur. So the rule we go by is we listen to the doctor, even if he's not Jewish, even if he's not religious. It doesn't matter. The bottom line is, the halacha told us to listen to the doctor, at least to be careful with pikuach nefesh. And even the doctor's estimation. I once asked Rav Nevenzel, I said, I have certain scenarios where the doctors are answering me, and it's just an estimation. I know and they know that they don't know. So he said to me, but they're giving you an estimation. I said, yeah, but what's it worth if they don't really know? So he said to me, think back 500 years ago, 700 years ago, 2,000 years ago. Go back to the days of the Gemara. How much did they know? All their medicine was different estimations. And then the halacha said, go with your doctor, right? So the halacha said, rely on the doctor, back in the day when medicine wasn't so scientific, right? And still the halacha said, this is the medicine we have, we listen to them. So the same thing goes here. We respect what the doctors say, and we factor that into our pikuach nefesh discussions. If the doctor feels it might be pikuach nefesh, we deal with it. Now, it's interesting that the halacha is almost like modern medicine, in the sense that 38 degrees Celsius, you guys can do the math what that is in Fahrenheit. What?
7.6,
no? No, that's the first temperature of fever, 38. 38 and up is when it's starting fever. Check, it takes a second to check, right? Right. 40 is 105.
What's the number, 38?
Yeah. You could just do Celsius times 9/5 plus 32. You don't need an answer. 100.4, okay. Thank you. So 100.4 Fahrenheit, that's the starting point of fever. So this is relevant to newborns. When a baby's a newborn till 6 months, once there's a fever, we treat it as pikuach nefesh. We have to deal. Newborns don't usually have fever. You have even a sign in the emergency room, if you have a newborn with fever, don't wait online. Just walk forward. So fever starts at 38, and at 38.5 for a newborn, it's pikuach nefesh that you have to do everything. You cut the line, you run in, you... 38 is already something dangerous. You have to start asking questions. You call your doctor, you call the hospital. 38 from our end, you have a situation you have to worry about. At 38.5, you drive, you do everything you have to do, it's pikuach nefesh for a newborn. Newborn till 6 months. Okay, there were questions. Yes, good morning, Tzvi.
What about if it's the other way around, where, let's say, there's a pregnant woman who started going into labor, and the doctor says it's best to wait at home until you're actually late stages of labor. Now, can they wait at home knowing that Shabbos is coming in?
Why does the doctor want her to wait at home?
Ease of birth, better for the baby, as in...
So what we've done in those scenarios, the question was if a woman starts labor Friday afternoon. So it depends. If she thinks she's going to have a long labor, so she doesn't have to suffer in the hospital. We had this, and if I'm not mistaken, we called Rav Moshe Halberstam Zatzal on this question. My wife started having labor late Friday afternoon. And if I'm not mistaken, he said, being that you don't know if it'll end up being full labor, if she's going to give birth on Shabbos, if it's going to be after Shabbos, you don't know, so she doesn't have to go to the hospital. The flip side is, when we did know, we had ones that labor started we were doing shiur here on Thursday night, and my wife told me, it's starting. Now it's starting, we didn't know how long that was going to take. This story happened about 5 years ago, 4 years ago. So, we ended shiur. I went back to Kochav Yaakov. We brought in a babysitter to be with the kids. And then we took the last bus, the midnight bus, to Yerushalayim. And then we walked to the hospital. My wife wanted to walk. Right. She wanted to induce labor. She didn't want to. I said, we'll take a taxi, a bus. No, we're walking. So we walked. We walked that hour plus to the hospital. And we spent the rest of the early morning hours walking the hospital corridors until delivery came. But part of our thing was, delivery was like at 5 in the morning, was we didn't know if we were, what would happen with Shabbos. I'm saying, so you have situations where you can do that, where you can go to the hospital and walk around in the hospital. It depends on the person. Some women feel like, don't forget, this wasn't their first, second, third, fourth, or fifth delivery. I'm saying, you have a certain amount of experience, then you're comfortable. You're like, we'll walk. I'm just saying, there's a difference here. Part of what you have to factor in the question is, where's the woman holding psychologically? How will it affect her childbirth? You can't just say, well, we'll walk the corridors, we'll be okay. Some women will have a much easier delivery if they're at home for the first few hours. When we were doing our first, I think, it was our first delivery, when labor started, my wife told me, go down in Shachris and I'm making challahs. I said, what? She said, yeah, it'll distract me. That's better. So she went to make challahs and I went to daven shachris. I couldn't focus on my shachris, but she made challahs. What?
The challahs good at least?
They went to my in-laws, I think. I don't know if we got them in there. I don't know. I'm just saying there are, you know, different strokes of different folks. And the halacha over here factors in the psychological state of the woman. Meaning to say, the doctor says stay at home. Well, what does the woman want? Will the woman be better if she's at home the next 5 hours?
It's really whatever she chooses.
To a large degree, yes. Meaning to a large degree, when we deal with pikuach nefesh and childbirth, so the halacha factors in her needs. The case in the Gemara is, it says that you can turn on a light for childbirth. So the Gemara asks, what's the chiddush? Of course you could turn on a light for childbirth. So the Gemara says, no, we're talking about a situation where there's enough light in the room. So the Gemara says, okay, so then why are you turning on the lights? So the Gemara says, because the woman who's giving birth is blind. So why do I need to turn on the light? Because she feels like there isn't enough light in the room. She senses the hour, and she thinks that right now it's starting to get dark, and that you're not doing a good job delivering her because you don't have enough light. So she feels like she needs the light so that you will do a better job delivering her. Says the halacha, turn on the light so she feels comfortable. So you understand how far the Gemara, the halacha, took it.
Do you have to say you turned on the light?
We don't play games. We do it. We do it. No, they know. You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. The Gemara gives us stories about Rav Yosef who was blind. The Gemara gives us many different stories of people who knew, who were blind, and they knew exactly what was going on around them. So the halacha says, turn on the light so she'll be comfortable. So from that halacha we learn a lot. That's why if a woman says, I can't give birth without my mother there, I can't, you got to get my mother. We listen to her. But why does her mother have to drive her to the hospital on Shabbos? Because that's part of what she needs. Just like the blind woman who says, I can't without turning on the light. So I asked Shaila, I asked two of my teachers. One teacher who's on one level, and another one who's like one of the Gdolei Adar. So the Shaila that I was asked was, there was a woman who said that she can't give birth, she can't focus on childbirth, if her kids aren't being taken care of by so-and-so. If they're by anyone else, it's going to drive her mad. That's her psychological state. She doesn't trust anyone else with her kids, and she won't be able to give birth responsibly. She won't be able to be focused on delivery and do it right if they're not there. Before we continue, we just have to understand that if a woman works with the midwives during childbirth, then there's a greater chance that she and the baby won't be in danger. But if a woman loses all control and I can't, and then she's totally out of it, so then she could tear herself to the point where it's dangerous, and even if it's not dangerous, it could have long-term repercussions. I mean, there are times when she should push and not push. Working with the midwife and getting the baby out comfortably can sometimes be the difference between a woman tearing. A woman can tear to the point where she tears herself and connects all the different apertures that are down there. And that's not so simple to fix. I'm saying so childbirth is something which you want the woman to be in maximum control. It's not a joke for a woman to lose control and be panicked. So we definitely factor in her psychological needs. Do we go that far? So, do we go that far to say that if she says, I can't, if my kids aren't by my aunt or by my sister, I won't be able to focus. So, the first Rav who I learned by said, you know, is that legitimate? And what if a woman said, my stocks are falling. If you don't sell my stocks, I won't be able to... things that are relevant to a child, they're fine. Things that are outside the story, well, what's happening back at home, let her find someone she trusts. She can't just say that. And then I went to one of the Gdolei Ador with the question, and he said to me, if she says she can't concentrate without it, you put the kids in a car and send them to wherever she'll be comfortable giving birth. So I said, the example of the first Rav, I said, and what if she says, I can't concentrate, my stocks are falling. If you don't sell my stocks, I can't give birth. So he said to me, look, two things. Number one, we're going to listen to her. But she has to know there's a place called Gehenna. And we have to listen to her. But she has to know that she's going to have to answer up in Shemayim whether she really couldn't do it without it or not. He said, the idea that I have to listen to a person that says, I'm going to be in danger if you don't do X for me. I have to listen to them. But the flip side is, she has to know that I'm not taking the responsibility for the act. It's her responsibility. And in Shamayim, she's going to have to answer up for every Chil Shabbos. So if she's right, she couldn't do her childbirth without it, so fine. Now, I think what he meant to say is, we don't usually pressure a woman that way. When a woman calls up to ask a Shaila, she wants you to give an answer, and she could walk away with the answer and not worry about whether it was right or wrong. But that's so long as the Shaila is within the confines of normal halacha. So when the woman says, I can't concentrate, I'm so nervous, I'm a person who I won't be able to stop, my blood pressure is going to go through the roof, because that's the type of person I am if my kids aren't by someone who I trust. So there we can maybe take the responsibility and say, fine, in light of what you said, fine. But the kid's there. But when she starts talking about stocks, there I think he meant to tell her about Gehenna. Tell her we're going to listen to her. Yeah. But that's why here we're going with the concept of Rav Shlomo Zalman. I have to trust the patient.
See, like if he checks the stocks, if he's like breaking Shabbos.
Again, when someone tells me, a guy walks into your home. I'll tell you a story. A guy walked into my home, and he had something which he said was pikuach nefesh, and he needed my help. And so I went and I was mechal Shabbos for him. Okay? Now the continuation of the story we'll leave on the side for a second. Let's imagine a different continuation for the story. Let's say I would find out he lied to me. I didn't do an avera. You can't say in shalech l'dvar avera. I have to work with the information I have at hand, and then what I did was a mitzvah, because I'm supposed to do that. But he's going to have to answer for that. The idea of Ein Shelech L'Dvar Avera is, if Reuven comes to Shimon and says, can you please, I don't know, turn on the light for me. So then, I'm not his Shelech if I turn on the light. If someone comes to me and says, tell me Lashon Hara. I'm not his Shelech in saying Lashon Hara.
It is the stock works at open Shabbat.
Okay, Friday night it is.
What?
Friday night it is. When it's Friday night here, the stock market in America is still open. Shabbos comes in at what? 100% and Yom Tov. Yeah.
Shoot, I was trying to like.
Okay. What? Yom Tov, right. These are questions we get all the time. That things are going on the market on Yom Tov. We had a Bitcoin, a type of.
Hours, yes, I guess so. She's holding Bitcoin now. She's already a crafty lady.
What is Bitcoin?
I'll tell you that later. Back to here. So, Chilul Shabbos, we said, when we have Safek Pikuach Nefesh, so we're Mechal Shabbos. And that means if a woman's not sure, if it's Pikuach Nefesh or not, then you do whatever you have to help her. One of the things that happens is right after Yom Kippur, the hospital wards get filled with people who have to give birth. Why? Because all these people were pushing it off. It's not that there are necessarily more. They've been researching this for the last decade plus. And what they've discovered is, if you factor the lower number that come in on Yom Kippur, meaning you have a ton of people that on a regular day would just show up to the hospital, and on Yom Kippur they push it off. So then, Matzei Yom Kippur, suddenly you have all these people walking into the hospital. It seems like everyone's giving birth, Matzei Yom Kippur. But you don't really have to do that. What you have to do is ask yourself, am I in doubt, is it dangerous? And if I think it might be dangerous, then I better get into the ambulance or the car and go. Which is better, an ambulance or a car? So that depends on where you live. And for most people, it's better to take someone else to drive because they won't be so focused. And sometimes, we had a story. We had a story 2 or 3 years ago that a woman kept postponing going to the hospital. And finally, she went. And the ambulance, they said, oh no, you're about to give birth, you're about to give birth. And they rushed her in. And as she entered the delivery ward, she gave birth right there. She didn't even make it to bed. So she's standing there like everyone's in the waiting room or whatever. She's like just in the door. And the baby comes out. So the nurse goes to her, look, I know you're embarrassed. You didn't make it to bed. But don't feel bad. Last year we had a woman who gave birth at the entrance to the hospital in front of everyone. So the lady goes, I know. She goes, how do you know? She says, it was me. So that lady, with all due respect, should get there quicker. I'm saying, you see, so some women really give birth very fast. Someone from the time their delivery starts to the time it ends is under 40 minutes.
Supposedly, in cities which Uber has been established, the ambulance usage rate has been reduced by 7%.
Wow. Because
like a lot of people are just using Uber instead of ambulances.
Yeah, fair. So I'm saying we have to remember that we don't have to think about Shabbos in this sense. You have to ask yourself, is it dangerous or not?